Hey Jennifer, we're back.
You bet we are, for another episode of Home on the Res.
Housing ties in with so many other issues, like today's episode, which is called Where Have the Ice Roads Gone?
Northwest corner of Canada is warming faster than anywhere else on the globe. That means the ice roads have a shorter season, and houses and roads that are built on what used to be permafrost aren't holding up.
One of the communities where the permafrost is melting is Tuktoyaktuk on the Arctic Ocean. That's where Ariel Lute is from. She's one of the people we talked to for today's episode on the impacts of climate change. But our first interview is with Dr. John Pomeroy. Dr. Pomeroy is the professor at the University of Saskatchewan and the director of Global Water Futures Program, the largest university-led freshwater research program in the world.
Impressive.
He's also a Canada Research Chair in Water Resources and Climate Change. So the first question I asked was about the impact of climate change in our communities.
Indigenous communities are scattered throughout Canada, but there are many in the north, and the climate change impacts tend to increase as you go northward. So Canada is warming twice as fast as the rest of the world, and northern Canada is warming three times as fast as the rest of the world. So when people around the world talk about limiting climate warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius from the start of the warming, which was back in the 1800s, that's already happened in much of Canada and in many Indigenous communities. And so the people in those communities are already dealing with the impacts. Maybe ice roads don't freeze up as well as they used to. Lake ice might be thinner. Where there's permanently frozen ground, permafrost in northern Canada, in many cases it's thawing in the summer now, much deeper and deeper, and causing buildings to collapse or roads to collapse. And the other thing that's happening is it's causing changes in lakes. The shorter lake ice cover means that lakes have a longer time in the summer to warm up and to receive nutrients from the land. And when there are too many nutrients, then you get algae growing in the lakes and the water quality becomes worse. Also, as the ground thaws, as the permanently frozen ground begins to thaw, it can release chemicals that have been collected in the ground, and even some cases diseases that were frozen in thousands of years ago. So there are massive impacts on First Nations communities.
Wow, I had no idea there were so many impacts. So how are Indigenous communities dealing with these changes?
Talking to a few First Nations communities, is the elders in particular are very aware of these changes because of changes in travel patterns, what times of year it's safe to skidoo on a lake or a river, or the ability to use ice roads to bring food supplies into the community, or even particularly those who hunt and trap on a regular basis. They'll notice the differences in snow depth, the changes in animal behavior associated with this. It's even reported that grizzly bears are expanding their range into the western Arctic and up into the coast of Hudson Bay. First Nations communities are, in general, much more aware of it than people who are living in the big cities are, because in the city you're so insulated from nature that you can miss the changes in the natural patterns.
What about housing? How will climate change impact the construction of homes on First Nations?
It will impact them in many ways. One is the challenges in transportation of the materials to the communities. So where there are winter roads, the winter road season is shorter. Where there are railways, like the Hudson Bay Railway, it was washed out by floods associated with climate change, had to get rebuilt. It took some time. That really impacted Churchill, as well as the communities up and down the coast of Hudson Bay. Now, when homes are getting built, if there's frozen ground, permafrost involved, then communities like Inuvik are finding that the older homes are collapsing now and having to be rebuilt, and they're having to send the pilings down much deeper into the permafrost to provide a stable foundation for the homes. So that's increasing the cost of these homes quite a bit.
So what changes do you think need to be made for future homes?
Well, for future homes, the other consideration to make is the carbon emissions associated with building the home. And the lowest carbon emissions are from building a home made of timber, of wood, particularly if it's locally harvested and processed, because then the transport costs are much lower. The other thing for new home construction is to make sure that homes are not put where it floods on a regular basis, or where it's starting to flood as the climate changes. And then the other is, of course, with permafrost, is make sure there's proper pilings put in to allow for the frozen ground to stay frozen as long as possible, despite the warming climate.
Is there anything you would like to add?
The program that I'm associated with, Global Water Futures, at the University of Saskatchewan, is trying to address how we deal with climate change in the future and how it affects our future water. And there are a number of projects there that are joint projects between First Nations communities and university investigators. And these projects are quite interesting because they combine the traditional knowledge of the community with the Western science that's coming from the universities. And they're co-led by a member of the community as well as the university investigator.
For First Nations communities, if you were to give advice, what message would you give regarding climate change?
It's happening, and it will continue to happen over our lifetimes, our children's lifetimes, and our grandchildren's lifetimes. Hopefully, international efforts will eventually get it under control. But in the meantime, the communities have to survive. And to survive means being strong socially, economically, culturally. And so the traditional culture will be very important for survival, as will having youth that are trained and interested in science and culture to help find solutions for the future. So it's going to take every bit of skill and strength that the communities have, from the deep cultural understanding and history to using modern technology where it's appropriate. And my advice would be to use everything you can get your hands on to survive. I also think it will be important for communities to be able to manage their local environment and have more say in that management and management of their land and of their water.
That was awesome. He is so knowledgeable and his advice is so thoughtful and encouraging.
Our second interview for this episode is with a young woman from the farthest northwest corner of Canada. Her name is Ariel Lute, and she was raised in Tuktoyaktuk on the shores of the Arctic Ocean. Ariel and her friends in Tuk are raising awareness about how climate change is impacting their communities.
And they aren't just raising awareness in Canada. They produced a film called Happening to Us that is being screened around the world.
Ariel, can you tell me about your community of Tuktoyaktuk?
It's a small, remote community with under 1,000 people living in it, and it's on the coast of the Arctic Ocean.
So what kind of changes are you seeing in your community?
There's a lot of erosion going on, and that's affecting, it's making the ground not stable, I guess. My house, for example, is on the edge of the tundra, and the tundra has been melting because of permafrost and just collapsing. So my house is literally my balcony is hanging off of the edge of the tundra, and it's affecting the houses, to the point where they have to be relocated. If it's if the house is stable enough, then they would move it. But if not, they'd have to rebuild it completely. And a lot of these houses here are really old, so they can't just be lifted up and moved.
I read that Tuktoyaktuk might be the first community in Canada that has to be moved because of climate change. Can you tell me about that?
They're relocating. They're planning on moving the town more inland towards the Inuvik are in the town next door to us.
When did all of this start happening?
Like probably 3 years ago for sure, because that's when like they started like being worried that like the people that are living at the point, we call it the point, it's like the houses beside the ocean, those guys, like their houses, like already like three houses had to be moved. So like in the last 3 years, so I would think 3 years ago is when they started noticing that the water was reaching their houses and started like taking chunks away from the land. Yeah, they're already building, like finding secure places to put houses, and that with like moving the houses away from the point. Those are like the main houses they're trying to save, but they are already rebuilding houses like inland.
Could you tell me a little bit about your documentary Happening to Us?
Yeah, it all started like in a classroom. We were just making up ideas of, because it was like a project we were supposed to do, and we decided to make it about climate change. We titled it Happening to Us because like it's happening, because like we thought that was very interesting to discover more. We only were planning on showing it to our community, but then it ended up being shown at the COP25.
The COP25 you mentioned was a UN climate change conference in Madrid, Spain, and you presented your film there. That must have been exciting.
We showed it like about 7 times throughout that whole conference. And after showing our film, we got like a lot more people throughout that conference to watch it, because like I guess they were talking about it and told other people, and the people that came to show up and show support, they really enjoyed it, and they told us how inspired they were, and just that they were proud that Inuit youth are taking a stand.
So what's next for you and your friends?
We have our own office now, and we're just trying to make it into a company. And our next film that we already have scheduled, like for this spring, is to find out more about microplastics that are ended up in our whales that we eat.
I'm really happy to hear that you are continuing your work and raising awareness about what's happening in your region of Canada. Is there anything else you would like to tell people?
If I could tell youth around the world to embrace their culture, and then like not to hide their culture, just like make something beautiful out of it, and to hopefully get it shown, like, I don't know, just like take photos maybe, or wear their cultural clothing, because like, yeah, just embrace their cultures more, because that's what's going to save us, I guess, from climate change, is to like show the people around the world how we lived back in the day without causing anything, like any damage to the land. We just respected everything we had, and never wasted, or just like showed complete respect. And I would just want like youth to realize that like our culture is our savior in this crisis, because like we have to learn from our elders and keep up what they were taught.
That was so inspiring. I love her call out to youth to use their culture and the teachings from their elders.
Well, it's us youth who are going to have to live with the impacts of climate change.
That's right. Sadly, that's all the time we have for this episode of Home on the Res.
I'm McFavel.
And I'm Jennifer Francis. Home on the Res is produced by the Indigenous Communication Arts Journalism Program at the First Nations University of Canada.
Thanks to the First Nations National Building Officers Association for giving us this opportunity to do a second season of Home on the Res.
You can listen again or download all of our episodes of Home on the Res at www.fnnboa.ca.
Thanks for listening.